This is Coop Mo, and I'm here with my old friend Phantom Hawk. Today we're going to talk about transportation on the cheap, at least relatively cheap. We just had a friend of ours from work tell us that they spent $400 to have the brakes brought up to spec on their car. They probably had $100 worth of parts, you'd say, in there?
I would imagine that would be about right if you bought all the brand new parts.
And maybe what, 2 hours worth of work?
Yeah.
So, savings of about $300?
Yes.
Okay, so this is something we often run into. We've been used to, that's a real word, isn't it? Working on our own cars. It's not difficult. How did you get into working on your own cars?
Well, basically, I started out when I was a kid. I used to tear things apart, figure out how things would work, and that progressed into automobiles, and then I took some high school classes, and just with help of manuals, Haynes manual is a really good manual. It's a step-by-step, and lots of pictures, so if you don't know what it is, you can figure out what it is. And progress to now I feel confident doing just about anything
right.
On a vehicle. Even in a modern car, if you know, with electronics and stuff, a lot of that stuff is, a lot of that, there's forums online that you get a lot of good information from. There's a lot of people out there that are willing to share their experiences and their skills with you. With that, I've been able to do just about anything. So,
it's a building process. You start off, say, like you haven't done any wrench turning at all. You've got a car, brakes are going out. It's got a squeal. Something's not right. You get with a friend that maybe has a little bit of skill. Have them sit down with you. Maybe go through one brake job. Once you do that, they let you handle the tools. You change everything out, maybe with them standing over your shoulder telling you what to do. That's a skill that you'll have for the rest of your life. You'll never have to pay for somebody else work on your car ever again, at least up to a point.
Right. At least your basic maintenance. I mean, once you get into transmissions and rear ends, a lot of that's pretty technical, and the equipment that is required for such repairs a lot of times is beyond what somebody would probably be wanting to pay for to have in their garage for a one-time use. But as far as like brakes, tune-ups, changing spark plugs, air filter changes, oil changes, all that stuff's well within most people's capabilities.
You mentioned the manuals. They're usually $25-$30.
It's been a while since I've priced them, but I believe $25-$30. And another thing is that on eBay, a lot of times you can get good manuals such as Haynes or Chilton. But also, quite frequently, you will be able to get actual dealer used manuals that they used in the service departments. And they're a really well-done book, and they talk you through step-by-step with a lot of nice photos and everything as well. So, like I said, even if you don't know what something is, when they refer to it, the picture a lot of times will, point you right in the right direction. So,
and a lot of times you'll find these manuals at the local library. And a lot of reference material. And then, like you were saying, the forums are just invaluable. If you have a problem on a vehicle, something that you can't track down, somebody else has had that same problem, just like on the computers, just like trying to debug something. Somebody else has had that problem. You type it into your favorite search engine, and somebody has got a fix or can at least point you in the right direction.
Right, yes. I've repaired a lot of my I own a newer Jeep, and I have repaired quite a few things by using the form, because I don't have a manual for that vehicle, because at this point, I don't really need a manual. I pretty much know what I'm doing getting into stuff, because I've, you know, used manuals enough. I've just gotten on a forum. Usually I'll try a search, because usually they like you to do a search first before you post a, hey, I got a problem. If you can't find it in a search, then yeah, I'm sure if you just post a simple question, you know, this is the type of problem that I have, has anybody encountered this problem, and what did you have to do to correct it? And a lot of times somebody will chime in right away. I've had responses as fast as 15, 20 minutes. I mean, not every forum's that way. You're going to have to find a good forum, and there's a lot of them out there, but there are some forums that aren't quite as good. But if you do any type of forum, you know, not necessarily car forums, but any other type of forum, you get a feel whether the people know what they're talking about or not. So in using that, I actually saved myself quite a bit of money here. A couple of years ago, my Jeep viscous clutch went out in the transfer case, and just the part alone was $350. And so I posted on there that my viscous clutch was bad, and they actually came back right away with, why replace the viscous clutch when you get a better transfer case for less money? You have to do some modification to the transfer case, but they had a real good step-by-step instructions on how to modify a transfer case out of a different Jeep to get you back up to speed. And it took me a weekend to do it without ever doing it before, and I am quite satisfied with the way it turned out. And it cost me, and I had to buy a couple special tools for it, and I looked around, and I got a full transmission with the front and rear drive shaft, and with the tool and a drive shaft, I had to take the rear drive shaft down and have it shortened. It came together to right around $200.
Wow! So you saved $100 over the cost of
$250 just for the part is what I saved. Not to mention if I would have paid somebody to do the labor to install it, which I was quoted, I believe, between $800 and $1,200. So
wow,
doing the work myself, I got a better transmission in the end, and I saved myself $250 over what just the part cost would have been to fix the other transmission.
Yeah.
And got a better transfer case. And got a better transfer case out of the deal.
Now, I kind of wanted this to go towards also saving money in transportation. We live in a county that is pretty large, and our public transportation sucks. We both work at the same place. We carpool 22 miles one way. We have to actually go into another county. So pretty much you got to have a set of wheels. If a person wanted to, needed a car, getting ready for winter. Winter's coming up. You're going to have to put the bicycle away. You have to put the scooter away. You got $1,000 to find a good car. What would you be looking for to make sure that you had a good, solid car to get you through the winter?
Well, first off, it's going to be hard to find a good runner for $1,000. You're obviously probably going to have to put some time or a little money into something. In my case, I was looking for a vehicle because I did get a job that's 25 miles one direction. So to save wear and tear on my Jeep, which is more my off-road vehicle and not really suited well for commuting, I decided to look for another vehicle that was going to be economical on gas, one, because the Jeep's a V8, it's a gas hog, and two, I wanted something that was fun to drive. So I actually went back to vehicles that I used to drive 20 years ago. One reason is because they're still not readily available in my case, but are still available at a reasonable price, and parts are available for them. And I'm familiar with them already. So, in fact, I cut a lot of my teeth on mechanicking on these vehicles because they are very simple. So I kept my eyes on Craigslist, and this particular vehicle showed up, and they wanted $650 for it. And I called the gal up and I told her that I'd be willing to purchase the vehicle, but I was not going to be able to drive, in my case, 500 miles to pick it up and come back and be in my budget. She informed me that if I was willing to pick it up, she would to make her an offer and she would think about it. So I went ahead and offered her $300 for the vehicle and picked it up sight unseen. And when I showed up there, I was quite disappointed because the pictures, not that she was trying to scam me or anything, but the pictures looked awesome. But when I got there, this car was in pretty sad shape. And so I figured in the worst case scenario, I would use it as a parts vehicle since I was pretty much committed to purchasing it anyway. So we brought it home and I spent about 2 weeks cleaning it up and replacing some. It had sat for 9 years, so I had to replace some fuel line, vacuum lines that had rotted with age, which is all within a normal person's capability. And pretty much it fired up the first time I tried starting it. And so I did a tune-up and all, and it actually ran quite well, and it turned out it only had 100,000 miles on it. And once I got the paint buffed out, it is now my daily driver. So now I'm getting 22 miles to a gallon to and from work rather than 14. And the wear and tear on my truck is non-existent now because I'm using this vehicle to commute. So I'm actually saving money in two ways because this vehicle is so much easier to work on and parts are cheaper for it. I'm saving money on parts replacement, being that it is a daily commuter. And also I'm saving money on my Jeep because I'm not driving it as much, and I'm using it for what it was intended for, so I don't have to maintain it. I'm saving myself money in two ways. Also, it's an older vehicle, so the insurance on this vehicle is, I carry full coverage on it, and it is, $154 for 6 months. So I still have coverage, so if it should be damaged, like a windshield, or which is quite expensive for it, but if it does get damaged, it's, you know, covered under my insurance clause. So I'm saving money on that as well, because my Jeep is actually $350 for 6 months, and it's, you know, still quite an older vehicle, but I'm saving quite a bit on insurance as well. So,
I know you had to, you replaced a lot of rubber on that car, including the tires. If you had to put tires on that car here in town at a shop, at a big chain store, what would it have run you to put tires on that car?
Well, it would have, I'd price a tire as a specific tire that I was looking at, because there's a online tire vendor that I was looking at tires, and I've heard that they were, should I say, cheaper to buy through them. So I thought I'd put it through the test. So I went on the site and I found myself a set of tires that I wanted, and then I called all the tire stores locally, and I was quoted anywhere between $450 up to about $550 for this same particular tire that I was able to order online. And so I went ahead and found out that it was going to be a lot cheaper. I managed to get the tires for $220 with shipping, and at that time they were actually offering a $50 gift card with the purchase of four of these tires. So I actually only paid $170 for the tires, and then I took them down to Walmart and had them mounted and balanced there, and it cost me $25 for all four. And so basically I got a full set of tires for under $200 that if I would have bought locally, it would have cost me $450 plus, depending on where I happen to purchase them, for the same exact tires.
So it's a matter of knowing what you need, getting on, doing some looking around, do some shopping, compare, and save some money. Don't jump at the first store that says, oh yeah, we can put some tires on there for you.
Right. And online is, I mean, you can save so much money by just looking around online, especially even with just parts. A lot of times you can save money buying parts online as well. There's a few automotive parts suppliers, especially if you have some vehicles that might be considered hard to get parts for. Like some of your older vehicles, you know, you might not be able to run right down to your local parts supplier and be able to pick it up, but you'll be able to pick them up online. And another thing is, on eBay, a lot of times, especially if you're driving an older vehicle, sometimes they try and clear out their warehouses because they need to make room for newer parts for the newer vehicles. So there are people that buy up these parts and then they sell them like on eBay. So if you keep your eyes open, you can pick up parts on eBay for quite substantial less money than you would if you had to go through a regular retailer. So you can save money on that as well.
So. That's great. So now if we discussed the car that you picked up, but if you were to tell people they needed a good, solid, cheap car to keep an eye on, what would they be looking at? What would you push them towards? Smaller, older Japanese, German?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because I mean, I have my preferences and I feel that they're easier to work on. I'm sure other people would beg to differ with me on certain aspects of that, but I, for one, don't like front-wheel drive vehicles. I find most of them very difficult to work on, and unfortunately, that's a majority of the vehicles on the road now. But if you can find a nice rear-wheel drive vehicle, I feel they're easy to work with because you don't have so much components in the way, and the engine sitting in there in a way that you can actually get to it a lot easier.
You shouldn't have to pull a fender off to change a fan belt.
Right, right. And, you know, there's still plenty of nicer, older vehicles around that you can pick up. In fact, this particular car I got, I paid $300 for, but you could probably find a good runner that somebody's, you know, just willing to sell to you. Well, there was one that just came up here, and I think they wanted $1,500 for it, and it had 66,000 miles on it. Granted, it's 40 years old, but, you know, it still gets you to point A to point B, and, you know, in some cases, people don't, you know, look down upon an older vehicle, but I find that my vehicle gets quite a bit of attention wherever I drive it, and so it's kind of more unique because I own it, and nobody else does. So to me, it's a joy to drive, not only because I'm saving money, but because I'm getting attention that, you know, other people ain't getting in their car. Yeah, you can buy a Ford Mustang, but, you know, everybody's got a Ford Mustang. But you buy something that is a little more unique, and it's, you know, easier to get parts for, and people are, like, coming up to you and asking you in the parking lot, where'd you get it? You know, oh, I remember my dad had one of those. You know, oh, I remember when I was a kid I had one of these. So it's a lot of fun. Driving an older vehicle, but there is a point, like in the 80s they had a lot of vacuum lines that, you know, they were just a mess, and a lot of those vehicles today would probably be a little over the top for some certain people that want to work on their own vehicles, but not all of them, but some of them. So when you're looking for a vehicle, it's something you got to keep in the back of your head. What are you willing to get into? If you get something in the 70s, they're actually quite basic. They hadn't gotten into the computer control era yet, and all your vacuum lines and all are pretty straightforward. In the 80s, they started going to computer-based ignition systems, and they get a little more involved because they're trying to do things with vacuum, engine manifold vacuum. And as it turned out, that didn't really work out well for them now. That's why we have all electronic now. So, and electronics isn't that bad. My 94 Jeep, it's got a lot of electronic components on it, but it's pretty straightforward. And the computer will actually talk to you. If you have a problem, that's the first thing you want to check, is see if the computer has anything in storage, in its memory storage, because it self-diagnoses all the time. And if you ever have a check engine light on, that's telling you that it's got a code waiting to be pulled. So you can, and it will tell you what's wrong. It won't necessarily be what the problem is, but it gives you this circuit that you need to look at. A lot of times it is the component, but it could be, you know, you got just some corrosion on a connector somewhere in the system as well. And which, you know, on a forum, if, the first thing to do, you know, is go to them and with the code number, and then they can tell you what that code is, and then you can either replace the part, and if that takes care of the problem, then you're good to go. If not, then there's, you got a problem in the circuit, and it's not that big a deal. Check your connectors, make sure they're nice and clean.
A lot of times those codes, the car will actually, there will be a procedure, turn the key, step on the brake, put your arm out the window, and the car will give you the codes by flashing the codes at you on the dash. But, and that'll be in a manual, but if you can't get it to do that for you, or you can't find the manual, if you can get the car down to any of your major car parts places, they will loan you the tool to run out in the parking lot and plug into the connector underneath the steering wheel. Usually that's where it's located, and it will tell you what that code is, and then that'll be one step closer to finding your fault. You mentioned earlier about the older cars maybe not being able for everybody because, you know, they are, you know, got some paint peeling and they're looking a little rough, they're a little tired. Before we wrap up today, I was hoping maybe you would describe to everybody a little bit about the $50 paint job.
Oh, yes, the $50 paint job. There is actually a online forum on the $50 paint job now, and I don't remember what it's called now, but
I'll find it and put a link in the show notes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's actually I first read about this about, oh, I don't know, about 4 or 5 years ago, and a guy had originally done it because he had a old Charger, and he had the bodywork done, or he did the bodywork himself actually, and he went to some places and got paint quotes. Now all they had to do was paint the thing, and they were getting, like, I don't remember, but back in this particular paint job he wanted, I think they were getting, you know, quotes of, like $3,000 to $6,000. And he just thought, that's way too much to paint for paint on this vehicle. And so he decided he was going to try and paint it with Rust-Oleum. So I don't know where he came up with the idea, but he actually, and it was originally what they call a roll-on method, and they use rollers. They dilute the paint down to a water consistency, and they use these foam rollers about 3 inches wide and rounded on the edges. And it doesn't go on real thick, and it looks like crap the first 3-4 coats. And then you sand in between every 2 or 3 coats, and I think ideally they want anywhere between 6 and 9 coats of this. And when they're done, some of these cars are just phenomenal. There's one guy that actually has an old Ford Fairlane 500, I think it's a 64, and he actually takes this thing to car shows and has won some prizes with this vehicle. And a lot of people can't believe it's a $50 paint job on this vehicle. It looks that good. Now they've gotten, they still have the Rust-Oleum. You can still do it that way, but there's also another product on the market now, and it's, I can't recall what it is. It's actually a boat paint, and they're getting really good using the same technique results with that as well. But it's a little bit more durable from what I understand because it's more UV resistant over the Rust-Oleum. And now there's actually spray applications as well.
For people who don't like to sand as much.
Right, right. And you can get away with 2 or 3 coats with the spray. And I've actually tried this on, I haven't done a gloss yet, but I did a flat black on my hood, and it actually turned out quite well. I was pleased with the results. Although, you know, it's got to keep the bugs out of it, but with the gloss paint, when you're done, you actually buff it, so you don't have to really worry if bugs and stuff get into your paint. So you can do this right in your driveway, roll your paint, let it dry, do your light sand, paint it again, and you do this over a day's, you can't paint it right away. You got to let the first coat dry. So most people that do it seem to, if they're doing it quickly, they'll paint it in the morning and sand it in the evening and then paint it again in the morning.
All right. That is some good stuff. I hope everybody was able to get something out of this today. Please leave some feedback, ask any questions. Be glad to get back with you on it. Hey, everybody. Help out HPR. Put out an episode. Phantom Hawk, thanks for being here in the shop today and helping out with a podcast. And appreciate it.
No problem.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.